Well, now that you're here, we're all in the company of your cool aunts. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And this is the Your Cool Aunts podcast, where we follow the lives and times of cool aunts through Claire's diary. So welcome back. And if you're new here, you can join the conversation in our Facebook group. There's more on our website and Twitter and Instagram, too. So follow us, like us, subscribe. And now let's get to it. Hey.
Hey, how are you?
Good.
Good.
We are back at the mic.
Good to see you today.
No, it's really the sun is changing its position in the sky, as they say, of the seasons. So, the title of Claire's diary today is The Englishwoman, a Map Maker.
Interesting title. So now where are we going?
I know.
Because we're always going somewhere. Hang on. Getting there.
Ah, wait, a few administrative matters. Thank you. For your positive reviews out there, people listening, we appreciate it. Every time you give us a thumbs up or a star, just a positive word, we feel it, we appreciate it. And, you know, people looking for guidance and looking for a good podcast. You want to hear a great story? This is it.
And we'd also like to thank everybody who has joined us from all over the world. And now we have a little map with stick pins.
Oh, my reference to in Claire's diary about the map with all the stick pins.
So if you're out there, we know where you are.
We got a pin in your town.
We got a pin in your state or your country. So again, thank you so much for joining us. Tell your friends.
I'm looking to develop more in South Africa here. We have a paucity of listeners in South Africa, South America too, actually. So says Claire, nieces, aunts, and friends. A while back, I recalled for you the night I got my first library card. The night, my mother told me a poignant story about borrowing and lending books, and I've never forgotten it. But when I told you this story, I started it by telling you about when it all began. When Laurent loaned me a book for an overnight flight that I was about to take. Wait a minute, she goes on to, I'm not going to interrupt her thought here. Let me just continue reading and then I'll comment. Claire continues, I count it as one of the best biographies I've read and one that continues to inspire me today. And I thought it worthwhile to step back and pick up where I left off with Laurent's book. You can jump back to it here at the ultimate passport story before continuing with this diary entry, but don't forget to come back because this is a really great story. Okay, Claire. Now, I do remember the story about the
library card.
Right. She called it the ultimate passport, which is cute, you know. Do you have any comment?
Oh, I thought
Hello?
You were.
Is there anybody at the other mic?
I thought you were.
Is your mic on?
No, I thought you were going to finish that thought, and I was waiting, but...
No, it's called a handoff in the business, apparently. We're such professionals. Okay. Anyway, and back to this moment, Claire says, the book that Laurent loaned me to the flight for London was the perfect book at the perfect time and place. And when she handed it to me, she said she wanted to know my thoughts about it on my return to New York City. This was an honor to think with Laurent. And a bit of a daunting challenge to absorb and analyze enough to have a coherent conversation with Laurent. The challenge did excite me. Here it is, and we'll talk again soon, Claire. Okay, one of the things I remember from this thing, when Laurent loaned her the book, is she gives it to her and she says, when you return it to me, we'll have a conversation about it. You remember?
I remember laughing about that.
Yeah. So, yeah, you don't need to go back and listen to that whole story. That, you know, in a very quick way, Claire shared a story about the night she first got her first library card with her mother. And her mother told her a very poignant story about Laurent loaning books out to a friend who never returned it. And the comment was, well, you wouldn't lose a friend over a book. But no, that person lost the friendship of Laurent right. for failing to return her book. So it was a very poignant story. Anyway.
I think what's interesting about her comment here is this discussion that reading the book, not for the purpose of just reading it, but for the purposes of having a conversation with Laurent when she returns to New York. So it's not just read the book and, you know, that's it. It's read let's talk about it.
I think the bigger point here is Laurent wants to talk about this book with Claire.
Right.
Well, I think it's a nod to Claire that, like, you're an adult now and I want to have an adult conversation with you. I don't want to just, like, help you out.
Well, I think it's different than being part of a book club. you know, where everybody is, I guess, on the same, you know, has the same.
I don't see Laurent ever being the type of person to participate in a book club.
No. But I'm saying her relationship, Laurent saying to her, we'll talk about it when you return, to me is like a little mini book club where it's higher. It's a higher standard than if Claire were attending a book club. You know what I mean? It's very different because she even mentions it. To think with Laurent and a bit of a daunting challenge to absorb and analyze enough to have a coherent conversation. So it's more than just give me a Cliff Notes edition of what you read. It's deeper than that.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure. Well, I haven't seen the story yet, so I have a feeling that, you know,
Claire is going to be like
it's not just
notes
a book
or
report,
something.
Right? Yeah. It's not just a book report. 5 pages, please.
Yeah, no, Claire's going to be read this very carefully. Shall we open the diary?
I knew open the diary sound effect.
From the sound effect department. That was the sound of this diary opening. Questionable, but, you know, roll with us. So this is from Claire's diary, and it's entitled The English Woman, a Map Maker. And before I continue, I just remembered something else that Claire says all the time. Cool aunts don't need maps. They find their way.
That's right. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah, she does say that
a lot. It just jumped out at me.
Maybe it's from the book.
Okay. Here we go. Claire says, on this night, I was headed to Paris via Heathrow, and I'd be in the air for at least 7 hours, and who knows what I'd encounter in these airports. I resisted even opening the book during my time in the JFK boarding area, but I dove in as soon as I was seated, and then by the time we finally took off, I was deeply engrossed. And just a note, in my experience, that can be anywhere from an hour to 3 hours by the time you find. I remember sitting on a tarmac waiting to take off from, I think, it doesn't matter from where, but we were headed to Paris and we sat on a hot tarmac for about an hour and a half or 2 hours before we took off. And it was just...
Oh, the day they had the decal on the plane.
Yeah.
The pilot gave
5 different reasons why, oh, folks, you know, first, you know, the saltines weren't delivered. And then it was something else. And then he said that they didn't have a decal that's required to fly, because inspectors
and
in
there
the
was
air.
No air conditioning. Remember that?
Yeah, they had us pull down all the shades and it was about 95 degrees outside. And it was, you know, sardines in a tin can. It was horrible.
The bottom line was they were looking for a pilot.
They didn't have a pilot. It was the co-pilot who was, you know, doing a bad job of covering.
And we won't tell you what the airline was, but.
Begins with an A.
It ends with an N. So you figure it out. Because we know you know what we're talking about.
Okay, we just narrowed our potential field of advertisers.
Okay, maybe it begins with an A and ends with a W. I don't know.
No, it doesn't. Never fly that anyway. So Claire's headed to Paris. She's got a great book. She's already deep into it, and she's still on. They haven't even taken off yet. And all right, 1, 2, 3, they take off, and she's still reading, and she says, I noticed the dinner service only enough to decline the meal, instead opting for chips, wine, and eventually tea refills, all so I could continue to read uninterrupted.
Or because she didn't want to eat the chicken.
Well, this is true. Yeah. Order the vegetarian meal.
The pasta. Pasta or chicken, your choice.
Yeah. Pasta welded to a plastic with a hockey puck bread. Anyway, needless to say, this was not Air France. I just want to go on record. This was not Air France. We do not have hockey pucks on Air France. Claire says, I briefly stopped reading a few times for a bathroom run or to reread a few paragraphs. Mind you, not for lack of clarity or comprehension, but more to lock into memory a particular thought or idea. Not so long ago, I would have jotted notes in the margin. The lingering habit of a student and an elevated need to remember as much as possible for the conversation with Laurent. But this was not my book, and I'd never mark the book of another, even in pencil.
And especially Laurent's books.
I wonder why she wasn't an underliner, a highlighter. She was a pencil in the margin writer.
She was a margin girl. Well, she was an English major.
Oh, that's true. Yeah, I guess English majors do it differently.
Yeah, you know what? I'm going to go out on a limb here, and people are probably rolling their eyes, but you know why? Because people in more technical disciplines want to underline or highlight exactly what's in the book. Whereas an English major just is like a conception, more of a conceptual note, right?
So maybe we should take a poll on that and see how many of you out there highlighters versus
the highlighters versus the underliners or the margin writers.
Margin writers. We'll do a poll.
Silly. So she would never mark in Laurent's book. That's where we left off. The next section is entitled I Stayed Up All Night, as most of us do on international flights. Next subtitle reads, I Stayed Up All Night. And she goes on, she says, this biography is the story of a woman who pursues her ideas with the intensity only attributed to men of her time, which could also be the lead-in or introductory paragraph of many biographies of women throughout the ages. Here, I'm speaking of the late 19th century, the peak of the Victorian era. And the woman is Gertrude Bell. She had the support of her wealthy British family, but under the weight of societal expectations. And she was unhindered by logistical detail or many of the British/Victorian societal norms. I would take the bet that Ms. Bell would have made the same choices with or without her family's financial backing, albeit with more difficulty in execution. She dealt with obstacles in her path as solvable diversions or delay that could be resolved. I guess that's called an optimist.
An optimist, you say?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess that is an optimist. Well, I guess she had to have been an optimist in that time, with money or without money. The idea of a woman.
Well, I think when you grow up with that kind of privilege that we know Gertrude Bell to have had, that everything is fixable.
Well, that's true.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, get another man on the job or woman or whatever, get another mind on it or hand or whatever, and you fix it.
I think people like that see obstacles as things to jump over as opposed to walls to smack into.
Exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like a wall. You can't move it. But no,
she's not going to be stopped by it. Right. She's going to find her way beyond it. Do you have any other thoughts? No? We'll continue on. Okay. In The Queen of the Desert, name of the book, Gertrude Bell appears to envision everything through her own question of degree prism. A natural leader and self-taught map maker, she placed herself at the most important negotiating tables, seated next to Colonel T.E. Lawrence, an officer, diplomat, archaeologist, and media darling. He's also known as Lawrence of Arabia and the inspiration for the book and the 1960s blockbuster movie. I'm going to stop right there.
This is a classic.
Yeah, this is a classic. I will admit to being disappointed because I went back to watch it one day. And our movie technology is so good now. I'd love to see a really good remake of this movie. You know, the quality of like an Out of Africa or something, you know, obviously an all-time favorite, but one of those epic.
Well, the technology is so much better.
Well, when you go back and you see movies made in the 60s or, well, even before that, but let's just keep it in the genre of movies filmed in color. Let's start there. Which Lawrence Arabia was filmed in color, wasn't it? Yeah, I think so. The technology is so good now. And when you look at an older movie, they're just so jumpy and it makes them look kind of corny. You know?
They remind you of those movies. I guess it was in the 30s before they, it was in the 30s before they had sound.
Yeah.
You know, they'd be like herky-jerky kind of movies look silly. Yeah. They almost look like they're on fast tracks, you know?
Exactly, yeah.
So, yeah, the technology of the 60s. But I just wanted to...
I think they were filmed at like, you know, 20 frames a second. It was like, it looked like...
Click, 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 click.
Yep.
But I think it's interesting that the subject of the movie where Gertrude Bell is like a footnote. She's not even... I mean, she was so dominant in the discussion. When you read the book, obviously, it's her life.
Lawrence of Arabia, the movie... doesn't
like,
reference her ever
she's
at all.
She's like nowhere. I think she appears there, but you don't know who she is or what she's contributing
to
the discussion.
Well, I think in this book, there's an implication that...
she was very much a part of the negotiations.
How close was she to Colonel Lawrence?
Pretty close. Very close.
How close?
I don't know how close, but pretty close. No, I'm just saying the perspective.
I'm not trying to besmirch her reputation.
The perspective of the movie centers on him, without her being involved at all. The perspective of the book kind of tells you the backstory as to what really happened during that period.
Yes, exactly.
So the moral of the story is write your own autobiography or have your biography written for you.
So, you know, saying that Lawrence of Arabia was the inspiration for the book and the blockbuster movie Gertrude Bell, not so much. Until this biography. she never sought nor did she receive the notoriety bestowed upon Mr. Lawrence because that was not her way. She was busy making maps, negotiating, and extending the hand of the British Empire. Some scholars of the period are of the opinion that it was, in fact, Gertrude Bell who brought decision-makers to the table upon which new countries were born and their corresponding new borders and maps were drawn. We all know who the map maker was. It did occur to me early on in the second chapter that Ms. Bell would surely qualify as a coulant for any number of reasons. My preferred reasons would be attributed to knowing her way because she navigated by the stars and drawing her own maps when none existed. But mostly it would be for keeping the men at the table on the path of diplomacy. So I was right. I did anticipate this notion of coulants knowing their way.
Okay, so we know at the end of it, she said, at the end of this passage, she says, we all know that the map maker, who the map maker was. And I think what's interesting about that is a map maker creates the lines, right? This is getting back to the issue of, do you see it as an obstacle or a wall? If it's an obstacle, you jump over it. If you're creating the map, you create the boundary, right?
Mm-hmm.
So her ability to do that, really, she's so forward thinking in terms of the diplomacy, combining the diplomacy that needed to happen and the creation of where the boundaries were going to be.
Right.
So they went hand in hand.
Well, these negotiations are usually revolve around like, oh, wait a minute, you got too much of that river. And what does this one get?
Right.
You know, the countries that, you know, are forming a border between them. And there's a give and take about natural resources or, you know, physical boundaries or whatever.
But she had to be somebody who was so forward thinking, who would understand that there's a way to get there. There's a way to resolve this, who gets half the river or who gets the mountain or whatever. And that's because
at the end of the day, it's not about maps, rivers, mountains or anything. It's about dealing with these other men who are sitting at the table from very different cultures. And she's the only woman there. And she has figured out a way to make them agree.
Yeah,
she drew the modern day map of Persia.
Right. But what I was saying was the ability for her to think that way, for her to think beyond how do you get there, right?
Mm-hmm.
Getting all these people at the table from different cultures, but also the ability to think of how you're going to do the dividing, who's going to get what piece, has to show that this woman was such a forward thinker. To be able to negotiate these things phenomenal,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
Most women were not. We're not even able to think that way because
right.
Society never gave them the opportunity to think beyond whatever the social
the drawing room,
were.
Literally. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this biography tells us far more than her diplomatic, you know, her sense of diplomacy. It really gives us more about her as a person.
Right. I'm just going to refresh your recollection and read back the last sentence of that last paragraph that Claire gave us. And she's saying her reasons for thinking of her as a coulant, thinking of Gertrude Bell as a coulant. She says, but mostly it would be for keeping the men at the table and on the path of diplomacy. That's exactly what you say.
Yep, exactly.
The next section, the best part of a good book. And Claire goes on to say, I'd lost track of time. And finally, standing to stretch, I was surprised to realize I was nearing the end of the book, and even more so when the pilot announced our initial descent into Heathrow. Neither movies, meal service, nor a fidgety seatmate had been enough to take me away from the story of Gertrude Bell. It was an intense reading experience that absorbed me like other biographies hadn't. So much so, I'm sure I could only be disappointed by the movie or a television miniseries of her life's story, her life's work. I did catch myself recalling various moments in Bell's life over the course of the next few weeks, and in this act of recollection, it extended the value of the read for me, even winding its way into my own everyday story. And it prompted me to ask of myself whether there might be new or better approaches to my own challenges. Odd as it may seem, I was comparing myself to an historic figure, but this time I didn't brush it away or laugh at myself for the comparison. It was relevant and useful. A found map on a lost day.
Back to that idea of coulants don't always need maps.
Well, you're willing to let your shoulders down and keep going. But that's what Gertrude Bell did, too. She just kept going. You know, if you don't have a map, look around, draw one, and keep going.
Find a landmark.
So the next section reads, the return flight and back to the shelf. Of course, the next time I was in New York, says Claire, my first stop was Laurent's to return the book. I wasn't sure if she'd be there, so I let myself in with the same key and the same alarm code I carried since my college days nearby. Another code that we shared was that of the do not disturb variety, to alert one another if anyone else was in the house. It's an umbrella hung on the inside handle of the front door. Okay, very recently, we had a conversation about
that special engraved handle umbrella.
Loved objects that are worth tracking down and worth taking good care of. Yeah.
So now it stands as a, I don't know, what would you call it? A signal? It's like a light, right?
Yeah.
A flashing light. Do not disturb.
So the umbrella is hanging on the door. Okay, I wasn't sure there. Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say it's interesting that we often think of aunts as being so much older or in the next generation, and it's interesting that in this case we know there's not much difference between there's a decade.
There's
or so.
Only about 10 or 12 years between them.
Yeah. And while Claire was in school, you know, she would go to Laurent's periodically, and that they had a sign. You know, do not disturb if you see this.
Right.
Umbrella.
Well, think about it. Laurent is obviously an accomplished woman, because if Claire is somewhere around 20 in college and Laurent is 12 years older than she is, so she's 32, 33 years old, living the life. And yeah, if the umbrella is hanging on the door, you know, don't
stay
come in.
Away. Do not enter.
She doesn't say it. She just references it, but I assume she means the
umbrella. Well, they had a code. They had an alarm code, but they had a code.
No, what I'm trying to say is I'm assuming she's saying that the umbrella was hanging. She just said another code we had. So Claire goes on to say, I headed straight for the bookshelves and slipped the book back into place. That telltale void of a loaned book. Turning around, I felt her presence. She was waiting for me to notice so as not to startle me. I love everything about Laurent, you know? And she said, if I asked you now, we'd be up all night. So let's save it for the morning. Good night. Laurent had other things to do besides, but
that's it. Wow, that's a very sweet story. So now everybody's going to run out and buy Gertrude Bell's book. So you'll learn how to.
It's a great book.
Make your own maps.
It is. It's a
make
great
your own
book.
Life map. Maybe that's what that's what it tells us.
Well, okay. This has been an interesting diary entry. Somewhat.
I wonder what the discussion's going to be when they meet up the next day, but we don't know.
Well, two things. One, it'll probably be at the cafe or the farmer's market. No, the farmer's market's too busy to have this discussion. I think that Laurent would get into a discussion with Claire about, would Gertrude Bell have achieved the same recognition or status had she not been from a well-to-do family? And if she was somehow, if Gertrude Bell was somehow placed in the Middle East, you know, somehow for some other reason she was there, but she was not a wealthy English woman, would she have had the ability to participate in the way that she did?
Well, it's and also the time, too.
My argument to that would be they gave her some respect because of her family status. And without that status, I don't think she would have been let in any door.
You mean the Englishmen gave her some status? Because
culturally. They gave her some respect because she was a woman of some significant means. And I don't think she would have had any access without that.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree with you on that.
I also recollect that Gertrude Bell, she taught herself Arabic to speak, understand fluently. I believe she was fluent in like four
or
five.
Languages, yeah.
Yeah. This woman was no slouch.
She was ahead of her time.
Aren't we all? So let's keep this conversation going over in the Facebook group. And I'd like to hear from you and your thoughts about Gertrude Bell and women like her, and whether it's Victorian era or today or any other time. Stories about cool aunts. Yours, mine, and theirs. I'm Sam.
And I'm Ted.
And we'll see you next week when we're back at the mic.